We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Monday, April 29th, and over 200 arrests have been made across college campuses and universities since the anti-Israel riots and protests and encampments have gone on nationwide. And there's been a real difference between how some of the school administrators have responded versus others, and also some states and their law enforcement have responded versus others. But this coming, according to Fox News this morning, college protesters want amnesty as they await consequences of anti-Israel demonstrations. As anti-Israel protests linger across college campuses nationwide, many students are awaiting the consequences of taking part in these demonstrations. For many, final exams, financial aid, and even graduation are on the line, and their plight has become a central part of the protest. Students and professors alike have demanded amnesty. At issue is whether universities and law enforcement will clear the charges and withhold other consequences, or whether the suspensions and legal records will follow students into their adult lives. So the question, of course, then becomes as a moral question beyond a lot of the details that we can get into, and we will this morning, about this story. If these protesters actually believe in the legitimacy and the morality of what they're doing, then why are they claiming amnesty? Because the entire premise of civil disobedience is that the law itself is inappropriate, and the law itself does not reflect moral law, or ultimately, as Christians, we would say a divine lawgiver. And it's in the law is in conflict with what is true and good and right. And this is why, you know, we and how we get to ultimately the letter from a Birmingham jail, right? And to say that even people like MLK and others throughout history, most recently in my experience, at least, Pastor John MacArthur exercising civil disobedience along with many other pastors across the country in the context of the COVID ridiculous and immoral shutdown orders against churches, to say, no, there's something more important here and a principle that is at stake, and we want to reflect the truth of a moral God, and therefore we cannot go along with a government that is asking us to contravene the truth. And this goes all the way back to other instances in the Bible, like Daniel, for example, who was willing to serve the king of Babylon, but then when there was that edict that said you cannot pray and worship the one true God, he said that's just a step too far. I can't do that. And he was willing to suffer the consequences that ultimately God himself saved Daniel from, but it wasn't because he demanded amnesty from the king, or said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought that I was going to get away with protesting in some of these violent riots and breaking the law, and now I'm just saying, as a college student, I don't want the consequences of my actions to follow into adulthood. So the question, of course, becomes, what are we teaching young people when they want to go and behave, however immorally, improperly, and criminally in some instances? But then they can just say, like a child would to a parent, please, government, don't punish me. I want to be able to behave however I want without the consequences. So joining me now to discuss all this and more is our very dear friend, Alex McFarland, who is the host of Exploring the Word each and every weekday here at AFR from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Time, or 4 to 5 Eastern, or in Jenna time, as Tim Wildman likes to say. So good morning, Alex.
Well, good morning, Jenna. It's great to be with you.
Yeah. So, so overall, what's your response to seeing these protests and how, I mean, I just look at these kids as a product of a culture and a society and likely parents, but certainly an administration that has utterly failed them to teach the boundaries and the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah. It's kind of, get my way with a tantrum society. You know, I mean, we saw this during the BLM riots, and there was vandalism, and, you know, this is just increasing lawlessness, where rather than truth, the rule of law, what is constitutional and what is moral, it's an attempt to further the might makes right ethic, where people can get anything and everything if they just bully and intimidate and threaten with no repercussions. Amnesty now. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to disrupt colleges, disrupt graduations. You know, we're going to occupy, vandalize, damage property, and there'll be no repercussions. And we can't let this go on.
No, and for the administrations and the colleges that are allowing it to go on, and like Columbia, which is kind of the epicenter of these anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protests, and we should call them pro-Hamas. They're not just pro-Palestine. They're pro-Hamas and pro-terrorism. They're not, the administration, at least as of now, is not willing to call in the NYPD to help. And I think is, in a sense, coddling some of these kids, and many of whom are adults. I mean, most of them have probably reached the age of majority, and if you're a college student, you're probably over the age of 18 or close to it. And they're suggesting that somehow the line between the First Amendment and the right to peacefully protest, which is literally in the text of the First Amendment, the right to freedom of speech, cannot ever have contours and boundaries, that when you step into encampments or even violence or even going against the university's own rules, that somehow the administration can't come and say, no, you can't do this, because they fear the left. And certainly if these were Christians that were out there saying, you know, we're protesting abortion, they would be shut down in a matter of minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness, yes. And by the way, you know, the First Amendment speaks about the right to peaceful assembly. And, you know, these people are not about peace. They're not about truth. You know, there's the term social justice warrior, SJW, and that term first appeared on Twitter in 2011, so, you know, about 13 years ago. And warrior is the operative word. And what's, you know, not to generalize, Jenna, but a lot of the people that I'm going to say are, you know, 18 to 30, often college students, pampered Westerners, young adults from affluent families. And if it's anti-America, anti-Israel, anti-family, anti-Christianity, anti-traditional values, anti-capitalism, I mean, they're on board. And whether it was Occupy Wall Street, we all remember that. But it's like, if there's a big enough, loud enough, threatening enough mob, the school administrators, the establishment, certainly city administrators, whomever are the authority figures charged with keeping the peace, they generally will cave into a mob. And we just can't do that. I mean, this becomes tyranny. Let me share this, Jenna. There's a Methodist college in North Carolina called Greensboro College, and I had spoken there several times. I was actually in a couple of debates there because there was a professor there that was a very, very liberal professor, part of something called the Jesus Seminar. I had done a few debates there, and we had a Christian student group that asked our organization if we would bring a speaker to campus that was a former lesbian. So we did, and I went and I rented an auditorium, filled out the paperwork, got the insurance rider, all the things necessary. Now, this is a Christian school, a Methodist university, that bills itself as a Christian school. And we were going to have, at the student's invitation, although, you know, I paid for it all, but we were going to have a Christian female, former lesbian, share her salvation testimony. And it was a free event after hours, 7 p.m. Well, at this school, there had been, in one of the chapels, a Wiccan lesbian wedding ceremony. And that was kind of a well-known thing because it was so progressive and groundbreaking. Anyway, the day of our event, like 4 hours before our event, the president of the university called me and he said, "Alex, I cannot let you have your event here tonight." I said, "How come?" And he said, "I have an insurrection on my hands." He said, "I'm sorry, but your event is canceled." And I said, "Well, that's unfortunate because we paid for the auditorium and, you know, you can't. The contract says you have to give me like 10 days notice, not 4 hours notice." And he said, "Look, Alex, you'll thank me. You don't want to come here because all the students are upset that you're going to have a former lesbian share her salvation testimony." I said, "Well, wait a minute. At a Methodist university, a Wiccan lesbian wedding in a chapel is okay. But a born-again Christian lady sharing her salvation testimony is not okay." And he said, "Look, the students are all..." Here's my point, Jenna. We're to a point where rather than truth and order and morality and preserving what I think is a fairly fragile little entity called a Judeo-Christian constitutional republic, folks, we've got to have the calm, clear-headed moral courage, courage of our convictions, to say, whether it's, you know, one angry person yelling or a mob, no, no, no. We will not, social justice warriors, woke mobs will not cause us to give up what we know is right and true.
And so what ultimately happened in that story? Where did you come and hold your event anyway?
Well, I said to the president, I said, "God bless you. I understand. Look, I was a college president myself, but look, there's one thing worse than having a mob of wokies at your door, and that's becoming one of my sermon illustrations." So I said, "With all due respect, we're going to go public with this because you raise money as a Christian organization, and yet you're shutting the door on the Christians, not to mentioning breach of contract for an auditorium I rented." So I was on the 5 o'clock news, and we made some calls. We went to a local Christian school called Caldwell Academy, and I have to say, and I'm not a bad guy, Jenna, but we milked it for all it's worth.
Well, as you should, because that's a great example of how someone is caving to the woke mob, and the administration that is supposed to be keeping students in line are then allowing the students to run the university, or as some commentators have aptly put it lately, the inmates to run the asylum, for example.
Yeah.
And so and you can't do that. So it's a good thing to go out and to bring light on it. And I think that's one of the best ways to use PR. So I applaud you for that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing about it, let me just say, this gets to a larger issue, because our nation was built as a Christian nation. Our institutions, our schools, you and I both know the Ivy League universities were founded as Christian universities. But in the case of that particular Methodist college, when I went to rent this auditorium, I remember noticing there were all these development brochures, these fundraising brochures about Christian education, historically Christian. And I noticed the course catalog was all about progressive 21st century. See, here's the thing. To the older, you know, estate planning, transfer of wealth, endowment, they tout the Christian foundations. But to the students, diversity, equity, progressive, if you're going to raise money from God's people, how about spending it for God's purposes?
Oh, amen to that. And Alex McFarland, really appreciate it. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of the break with Alex McFarland, who is the host of Exploring the Word right here on AFR. We'll be right back. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And Alex McFarland is my special guest this morning, who is the host of Exploring the Word right here on AFR from 3 to 4 Central Time. And it is a great apologetics teacher. And we're discussing the social justice warrior movement overall and how that contrasts from the lines of truth and biblical morality, and how we're evidencing more and more of this type of progressive woke mentality across college campuses, and particularly the campuses that have had these anti-Israel riots and encampments that are pro-Hamas. So, Alex, I want to expand on something that you said in the last segment, which is this term social justice warrior, and the fact that, you know, warrior has an inherent meaning to be someone that is pursuing or engaged in, at least, a conflict, someone whose job is to be engaged in conflict, and usually conflict that can be violent, and certainly, you know, when we say the term warrior, we sometimes, you know, don't necessarily mean physical violence. Obviously, Christians would say we're warriors for Christ, and it's a spiritual battle, and so we have a little bit of different etymology there. But the term social justice warrior really is attempting to frame this argument as, or this perspective from woke students, as suggesting that they are pursuing a righteous cause by going against the elite, the establishment, or against the school administrators, or against, you know, whatever is not social justice, against the oppressors of society, and we want to build equality and all of this. And it intentionally ignores completely the truth of morality within the context of the law and in society. And so this term social justice warrior, almost in their view and the way that it's been used in the last decade or so at least, has been to say that that people who are pursuing their version of social justice in society are vigilantes, and they can pursue justice on their own terms with their own definitions and through their own means, regardless of what the law says. And that ends up, ultimately, that philosophy ends up in utter chaos if we, and total anarchy and a breakdown of civil society, if we follow that to its logical conclusion. And yet, so many on the left are praising these young social justice warriors.
You know, Jenna, this is such a blessing that we can discuss these things. Your show is so instructive. I'm very privileged to be on. I was thinking about something. In logic, there is something called the principle of coherence. In other words, if you start out with contradictory assumptions, you can't really build a logical, reasonable system of thought. And let me tell you about the contradictions that permeate the woke critical theory world and social justice. Now, in terms of like the violent protesters and they want amnesty, and keep in mind, folks, these anti-Israel protesters promoting Jew hatred, and let's get away from the soft term anti-Semitism. In the late 19th century, very influential in the life of Adolf Hitler was Wilhelm Marr, who founded the Anti-Semitism League of Germany. This was before the Holocaust, but it helped pave the way for the Holocaust. And Wilhelm Marr realized that Jew hatred was a little bit in your face. So he really popularized the softer term that sounded more academic, anti-Semitism, because he believed it had a scientific ring to it. So let's be very clear what these protesters are about. It is Jew hatred and anti-Israelism. And these very same people, Jenna, that are defacing and vandalizing campuses, disrupting American life, these are the ones that Biden is wiping out billions of student loans for, or at least attempting to. So talk about amnesty. My goodness, there's legal amnesty, but there's also financial amnesty. But here's the thing about the social justice warriors and the contradiction. And again, one of the principles of critical thought, Jenna, I teach critical thinking at Caris Bible College. I've been adjunct at Liberty. A system of thought based on contradiction contains no truth, however small. Okay, that's just all right. Now, the social justice warriors, they don't believe in morality. They are relativists. Now, you and I and the Western world, we believe in morals. There are some objective moral truths written on the human heart. Every human being knows moral truth. Now, we often suppress it. We dull our conscience. We might even bludgeon ourselves into a point where we can no longer recognize truth, and that's called a sociopath. But all people know deep in their soul right from wrong, the moral law. But social justice people, they are moral relativists. They don't believe in righteousness or moral or objective truth, and yet they demand justice. Well, see, that's a contradiction. There can't be justice if there is no such thing as objective truth. Do you see what I mean? So all these college students, they're, you know, critical theory says violence is sanctioned because you're fighting some allegedly righteous cause to rectify an injustice. There's a systemic structural injustice, they would say, which I disagree. They're saying, so violence, breaking the law, is legitimized because we're fighting injustice, and yet they don't believe there is an ultimate justice. Do you see the contradiction in that, Jenna?
Well said. And so if there is no ultimate standard of justice and there is no standard of truth, because justice has to be built ultimately on truth. And this was something that it took me going through law school and understanding, because I was very focused on justice as a legal proposition going into law school, and then realizing I had to take what I learned about justice, but understand that you can't define what justice means, much less apply it in any sort of meaningful or legitimate way, unless you first ground it and root it and premise it in objective truth. Because otherwise, justice becomes a matter of perspective. And what an individual says, I think this is just, versus someone else, then anybody's opinion goes. And so for these social justice warriors, if they are saying, we don't believe in objective truth, we're total relativists, yet we are pursuing justice, how do they define that? And ultimately, they define it subjectively as a matter of how they prefer a woke utopia to be created as a civil society. But they're not talking about justice in the same way Christians or anyone rational would talk about justice. They're talking about simply reinventing reality according to their preferences, which ultimately, Alex, as you well described, isn't justice at all.
Mm-mm, right. And for 20 centuries of the Western world, 250 years of America, we have recognized, and this has been our genius. I mean, this has been the secret sauce, the X factor of America's stability and greatness, is that our culture, our judiciary, our way of due process and law and order has been based on the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. Now, the Ten Commandments, which is Exodus 20:1 through 17, the Law of Moses, that is the law written on the human heart as well. And this is why it's fair for everybody. You know, the famous statue of justice is blind. No favoritism, no partiality, or at least there shouldn't be. Equal protection before the law, equal accountability before the law, because it's not anybody's opinion. You know, it's not any special interest group, or it's not any, you know, activists who have the biggest megaphone. No, it's the law of God. And what is truly just, Augustine said this, Aquinas said it, Dr. King said it, and I would urge everybody, seriously, and look, trust me, folks, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he would have nothing to do with these insurrectionists, these lawless people of the modern era. Read his 1963 Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Why We Can't Wait, and the letter from the Birmingham jail, where he predicates the validity of the peaceful civil rights movement on the natural law, objective rule of justice written in the soul of every human being. You see, true justice, true morality is that which reflects the character and nature of God. And Jenna, as we know, the woke, secular, Marxist left of today, they don't even believe in God. So how could their how could their cause be just when they deny the very foundation for justice, which is the eternal, immutable nature of God?
And Alex McFarland, I'm so glad, and I love that you distinguished the current social justice, quote-unquote, civil rights movement of today from the 1960s era of the civil rights movement that was about genuinely treating all people fairly and not discriminating against them based on their skin color, for example, but not to say that somehow those with who are in these oppressed categories then should have more privileges. And this is where the left and the social Marxists have completely co-opted the civil rights movement, and they are intentionally doing it to undermine the American founding, which was rooted in and freedom to conduct our lives and our business and our faith and our families in a civil society, was grounded in a recognition of property rights. And chief among them, of course, is the right to life. And therefore, because we're human beings made in the image of God, we have certain rights to exercise our faith. We have the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure, to real property rights, to contract, to all of these things that flow from our identity as human beings that are distinguished from every other living creature, for example. And so that whole premise that property rights are at the heart of the ability to have freedom in a just society has now been and is continuing to by the left to be erased in favor of this very purposefully and intentionally vague notion that civil rights are at the heart of the American experiment. And we can design and reinvent what it means to have civil rights, totally separate from what Martin Luther King Jr. was talking about, and to say that civil rights now belong to the oppressed. And if you are part of this LGBTQIA plus queer theory nonsense, whatever, then you should have the right, for example, to force a cake baker and his against his property rights in his business, his right of contract, his freedom of speech, his free exercise of religion, all of those things, to force him to assent to the civil right, quote unquote, of being homosexual and having a homosexual union that they falsely call a marriage. And so we've seen for the last, I think, 40 plus years of the left trying intentionally to undermine everything that America was premised on, which includes the Judeo-Christian worldview. And social justice warriors are now taking that term civil rights, and they're trying to make that the heart of America in a way, Alex, that I think is utterly false and very dangerous.
Well, and yes, with their civil rights, they also mean, no accountability, no civil accountability. But hey, I know time fleets away. I got to, on a different note, but about the contradictory nature, really, of the protesters and everything. I was watching, Jenna, Saturday, some of the protests in Florida, and I noticed some of the, they look like very affluent, largely Caucasian Americans protesting anti-Israel. And I noticed a lot of the females had on jewelry, right? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the fact, and I've been to Israel, many of our listeners, I'm sure, have. The largest facility in the world for the preparation of diamonds for sale is in Israel. In other words, 99% of the diamonds sold at retail in the world come out of Israel, right? And I wonder if these protesters realize that, So I did a Facebook post and I said, look, all of these anti-Jewish, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, pro-terrorists, understand they're promoting terrorism. Do they know that from Israel come this Source brand sandals that so many of the, Gen Z and people wear? Much of the world's swimwear, clothing, shoes, high-end leather goods, citrus products, soap, so many medical supplies, IV bags, bandages. Israel produces huge amounts of medical supplies, integrated circuits. So much of the software that makes the internet possible, and virtually all of the world's hummus, not to mention Cheetos, all come from Israel. Seriously, Strauss Brands that produces Cheetos is in Jerusalem. And anyway, the thing about it, they're like pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel, and I've been to Arabic countries. I mean, Israel is a great benefactor to the world. And I don't know, these protesters, they're, I would guarantee, carrying on their person, every time they log onto the internet, they're indebted to the city of Jerusalem, plus the military intel that, to a large degree, helps keep the world safe. Do they know they're trying to destroy all of that?
I don't think they know, nor would they care, quite frankly, because they don't, to your earlier point, Alex, they don't care about their logical inconsistencies. It's like the young people who are raging against the machine of big corporate America while they have their Starbucks latte and they're, posting on Twitter with their iPhones and they're, going to campus in their luxury vehicles. It's utter nonsense and inconsistencies where they want to take advantage of what corporate America allows them to while raging against the very same system that provides the benefits that they want. And that's the exact same thing that we're seeing, to take this kind of full circle, with these anti-Israel pro-terrorist groups that want to rage against the law, but then want that law to protect them. And they want all the benefits of amnesty, the First Amendment, everything else that was founded in this country to allow for freedom of speech, not these violent protests. But they want to take advantage of the very same system that they believe is so utterly against social justice. I mean, it's the same thing, and in just the last couple of minutes we have here, it's the same thing as TikTok and their CEO, I was talking about it last week on this program, claiming that the Constitution of the United States should prevent Congress from banning an app that undermines America's national security and our own citizens' private data interests to China. And they're trying to claim the cloak of our law while they're undermining it. I mean, it's exactly. All of this is absurd.
Well, they're using the tools of a Judeo-Christian representative republic to dismantle a Judeo-Christian representative republic. And I tell, listen, whenever I debate atheists or, you know, deconstructionists, I'll say, look, maybe you hate America, maybe you don't believe in God, but you have a vested interest because your prosperity, stability, and liberty comes from the worldview you so disdain. But folks, we're in a battle, and I want to encourage everybody listening, please pray for this country, please vote. The GLAAD, which is a gay activist, LGBTQ trans activist group, they've got a movement on right now, Queer the Ballot Box. Folks, I'm telling you, and I want to say to every pastor out there, and I've pastored two churches, spoken in 2000, pastors for God and country, get in your pulpit, use your platform to influence the 120 million adult professed Christians. Jenna, our nation can be saved, but we have to have the courage and the presence of mind to get in the fray, influence others. And as Christians, I was with George Barna a month ago. The only hope is if the people of morality, conscience, and Christian conviction will get involved. We could do this. Our nation could be saved, but we cannot passively just hope for the best. We've got to get involved. Jenna, you're doing a wonderful work informing, inspiring people, myself included. You're doing the Lord's work. But Christians, patriots, pray, influence, vote. Our nation hangs in the balance. It truly does.
It does. Thank you so much for your work and also your encouragement, Alex. I truly appreciate your friendship and everyone here at AFR, because this is the time and the opportunity that God has given us to be bold witnesses for His truth and to preserve our testimony in civil society. And we can't just stand back and say, well, I don't like either party, so it doesn't matter, or politics is too dirty, or, I mean, politics is at our door and it's literally infiltrating our homes and our churches. And if we don't stand up and engage, and especially engage the spiritual battle and be warriors for Christ in that vein, then we are ceding this country to those who would love to run it and ultimately reinvent it and completely tear it down. So thank you for what you're doing, Alex, and I always appreciate having you. We're up against a break here, but we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning to talk more about courage and bold, faithful testimony for the Lord, because all of these headlines, we can't just view it as, oh, you know, this is a college campus. Well, you know, none of my family goes to Columbia, so why do I care? There are worldview implications and truth versus false in everything that we see today, and we have to meet every opportunity with truth. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we've been talking about the big notion of justice and how that concept and the meaningful, truthful application of justice has to be grounded in and based in the Judeo-Christian ethic. Otherwise, it loses all meaning. And this is why worldview matters. And it matters to understand not just what the Bible teaches for the Christian life, but the application of Scripture to all of life, and why the Christian needs to be engaged, in the American Christian in particular, in our civil society to continue to work toward a more perfect union, as our founders, through the blessings of liberty that we have inherited, have given us that benefit. And for too long, Christians have taken kind of a seat or a back seat to say, we just want to preach in our churches and we don't want to engage in politics because it's dirty. And believe me, I know that it is very dirty. In the time that I spent in Washington, D.C., in the swamp, working in politics, it is unbelievably disgusting, the transactional nature of what goes on in politics and the uniparty that is there. There are people that there's literally no difference between a Democrat and a Republican in some instances. When the people in politics and in elected office don't understand that their office, they must steward, it doesn't belong to them. It is an office that they must discharge according to being a faithful and wise steward of government and the blessings of liberty that ultimately are under God's authority. It's the same thing, just in the civil government institution, as it is a pastor, that the office of a pastor or a teacher or an elder at the church, any of those offices of the ecclesia, those are not for a pastor to then discharge his duties however he sees fit. He has to follow what God has provided and what God has given under his delegated authority to pastors. Is why we are all under God's ultimate authority. And this is why the original sin was saying, we want to be under our own authority. We want to be like God. And we see this manifest, the same proclivity of humans to try to reinvent our own reality and say that we are the gods of our own universe and our own manifest destiny, in so many different ways. And in civil government, the sin that so easily besets Americans, to borrow a phrase from the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, the sin that so easily besets Americans is to think that we, the people, are the sovereign of our nation. And however we decide what is best for us, whether that is in collective judgment of Washington, or whether it's me saying, this is what I want for myself and my family, and get off my lawn, government, and government shouldn't be able to tell me what to do. I want to make up the own rules for myself. I don't want to be under anyone's authority. That is also wrong, because we see that God instituted government to promote good and restrain evil. And as an institution, a government is a legitimate expression of the authority that God himself has delegated. And so we, the people, are the very same people made in God's image and subject to the ultimate authority of God. And we can't forget that even when we engage in civil government. And so there are a lot of different ways that Christians have either ceded the argument to secular humanism and relativism, or just ceded debating altogether, or engaging in politics. And as Alex McFarland said in the last segment, it is very important to vote our values. It's very important to engage. But even more than that, if there aren't good Christian people to vote for, then how do we discharge our duty to vote best? We always can. Every election is always a closed universe proposition. And so we have to choose from among the best options available. There's never going to be a perfect leader, regardless of whether we are in a monarchy, we're in a direct democracy, we're in a constitutional republic with a president. No matter what our system of government is, if it's led by human beings, there will be flaws. You will never vote for a perfect person. And this is why we look forward to the return of King Jesus and the reign and rule of the perfect king for the rest of eternity. But while we are still in our civil government framework, we have to remember as Americans that the reason that we engage in civil government is not to foist our views or our majority on everyone else or even our policy. It's to ultimately reflect the authority of God. That's why Christians engage politics. And of course, the left would say, well, you need to leave your faith at the door. You are pushing your religion on me. Well, they're pushing their religion through law and politics as well, because somebody's view is going to be enacted in the law. Just whose view are we talking about? And I would much rather have the view of a perfect God who is the only source of true justice and true freedom and true liberty and true rights that every human being made in his image has pre-politically than the collective judgment of whoever happens to occupy the seats in the swamp right now. I mean, there's no way that I trust anyone in Washington over a perfect God. And so we have the ultimate responsibility to engage in civil government with a view toward Christ, the same way that we engage in church with a view toward Christ. We engage in our families with a view toward Christ. We don't engage in our family any way that we want to. I mean, this is why it matters that we don't designate homosexual unions as marriage. We don't say that families can just treat their children however they want, that spouses can treat each other however they want. There is right and wrong that is designated by God himself. And so in all of these different institutions that God has ordained, the law that pertains to them and the way that we govern ourselves, hopefully, so that the law of God doesn't have to crush us. And if you fall upon the rock, or the rock will crush you, that's what the Bible says. We have to be minded toward spiritual things. And so how do we exercise our vote if there aren't good Christians to vote for? Well, the obvious answer to that is that we need to disciple good Christians to then run for those offices. It's the same thing as saying, well, we don't have any good pastors. Well, then what are we doing? We need to train up pastors. We need to have better seminaries. We need to have better theological education for the next generation to teach the church and lead the people of God. And in the very same way, I think we are absolutely, completely ignoring our responsibility as Christians to say, well, as long as they're Republican, or as long as they're quote unquote conservative, then at least they're better than the Democrats and the leftist liberal Marxists. So, you know, that's better. And then we wonder why we look at the swamp. And we look even at the state and local level many times and wonder why these so-called conservatives aren't doing the right thing. And the right thing isn't just what you and I would suggest in our own opinions, but the right thing according to the truth of the divine lawgiver. But having the ability to rely on a civil office holder to do the right and moral thing is predicated first on that office holder knowing what is the good and right thing, knowing how to rightly divide scripture. And 2 Timothy 3 says this, but mark this, hard times will come in the last days, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, proud, demeaning, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, without love for what is good, traitors, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness but denying its power. Avoid these people. All of those things are people who serve something else and a different worldview than a truthful God. And for this last phrase here, holding to a form of godliness but denying its power, how many people right now in government offices, or even us as Christians, are holding to a form of godliness of saying, I'm conservative, I'm Christian, I want to do the right thing, but we're denying the power of God. We're denying the power that God provides through the legitimacy of the law to create a more perfect union, to have truth in civil society. The people who call themselves Christians or conservatives and they want to have a form of godliness and say, hey, I'm a quote unquote good person, but they're denying the power of Christ, the Bible says avoid those people. So we need to have better people that we can put in office, better on a scale of just acknowledging and understanding and recognizing the truth of the Word of God as applied to civil government. So we need to be praying for better leaders, but we also need to be making better leaders, and that comes through discipleship. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net, and we'll be back tomorrow morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.